Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we are going to be completing Sefer Shoftim. This is a huge achievement. Take great pride in what we have done over the last month. Here we go. As you just think it can't get any worse, then it gets just a little bit worse as well. So we've really left Israel in a very precarious situation. After a terrible rape and murder, it moves into a national calamity in which there's this terrible war. Israel lose 40,000 troops against Binyamin in the first two battles, and then they completely wipe out Binyamin with the exception of 600 men. Everybody else is killed. A tribe of Israel is almost completely wiped out. But it gets worse, because when they were waging battle, as most of them Mefarshim understand this pasuk, they actually did something else to Binyamin too. And that is they made a curse. They made they swore that nobody could marry their daughters to the tribe of Binyamin. Nobody could marry into them. That's how enraged they were with the actions of Binyamin. So now they were stuck in a predicament, because now all that's left of Binyamin is 600 young men, and they've got to put a curse on anybody who's not able to who'd marry their daughter to Binyamin. And they call out to Hashem, and they sat down in Beis El that evening, and they cried out to Hashem, and they said, how could you allow this to happen, that one tribe gets wiped out? And it's very fascinating just to sort of look at the irony of that pasuk. Yes, Hashem allowed it to happen, but it was through their hands, meaning today, in the end of the day, it was their actions which brought this about. But they say theologically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how could you allow us to do something so terrible? Really just the irony in that is terrible. So then they find a solution. They say, well, look, let's take a look at our accounts, and you know, let's see who didn't come to the battle. Meaning, we asked everybody to come to battle against Binyamin. Anybody who didn't come to be a battle would not be therefore under the oath of not marrying Binyamin. So they look into the accounts, and they find that there's a city called Yavesh Gilad, which did not come to the war. They did not listen to the callings to fight against Binyamin. Now, that happened to be that wasn't just a welcome or a evat. That was what was called a cherem, which means to say that every tribe or every city needed to send people to this war effort. People not doing that were liable for death. So they found the city of Yavesh Gilad. They said, Yavesh Gilad, why didn't you come? And they went to the city of Yavesh Gilad and wiped out the entire city, except for all the young girls there. And I mean, the further we go into this, the more we cringe. On the one hand, yes, there was a rebellion against Israel's federal government, against the time when all of Israel should have been coming together. At the same time, they just end up killing more Israelites in this episode over here. And they take these girls, there happens to be only 400 girls, and they go to the Sela Rimon, which is where these Benjaminites are hiding, and they say, look, you know, the girls of Yavesh Gilad weren't part of this oath because they weren't in the war effort, so you can actually marry them. Now that sorts out 400 Shidduchim. It's a pretty violent way to organize Shidduchim, but nonetheless, there's still 200 men left, so what do they do? So they arranged this thing that when it was the festivals at Shiloh, they would allow the daughters of Israel to dance in the vineyards. And what would happen is that the Bnei Binyamin, the people who did not, the children of Binyamin who did not yet have a shidduch, would literally, it says chataf, they would grab. But what the Mefarshim understand it to mean is that the men would initiate the relationship. They would go out and ask these girls to marry them, and then it wasn't anybody giving their daughters to the tribe of Binyamin. It was them initiating this, and this is how it continued. Interesting side fact is the Gemara in Baba Basra tells us that there was a statute of limitation on this curse. Of anybody marrying their daughter to Binyamin, and that was after a generation that ended on the 15th of Av, which is one of the reasons why we celebrate Tuba Av, is the end of this curse that was placed on Binyamin. And Binyamin was able to be regenerated, and it's interesting, in a few short generations, produces the first king of Israel, Shaul HaMelech, just to put that in perspective. And then finally, the end of Sefer Shoftim ends with the pasuk, which has been a refrain, which has come up numerous times in these last four parakim, and that is, "Bayomim ahem ein melech b'Yisrael ish hayashar b'einav yaseh." In those days, there was no king. Everybody did what they felt was right. And this is sort of a side commentary on these stories, is the fact that there could be a shrine of Micha, which could be allowed and let loose to be there all the times there's a Mishkan. The fact that there could be this rape and murder, the fact that there could be this civil war with no checks, no regulations onto what should be happening and how justice should be exacted, is unfortunately a commentary on Sefer Shoftim, where you had tribal leaders. You had a leader from here, a leader from there, no continuity, no intergenerational continuum. And because there was no melech, because there was no firm power,
that was continuous. This is what happens. This is what happens in the void. The anarchy, in a certain sense, the Lord of the Flies of this period of Shoftim, Rachman and Litzlan, which really lays the groundwork for Sefer Shmuel. One last point, just to be worth pondering in this whole section. I'm here because there is very little silver lining. As it happens fortuitously, the parasha of this particular week happens to be Miketz. At the end of parasha's Miketz, there's an episode which occurs, and that is where Binyamin is framed for a theft which he never really committed. Yosef puts a cup, as the viceroy puts this cup and hides it in Binyamin's bag as a ploy to be able to get Binyamin framed. So they're on their way back to Canaan, and they're captured, and Binyamin is found. And before they search the bags, Yehuda says, whoever has this cup will die. That's Yehuda says. That's how sure he is that they did not take it. Then they open up the sack of Binyamin. They find it, and Yehuda's face drops, and he offers them all to be slaves. It's a terrible moment. Now, interestingly enough, if you follow through all the parashas in the Torah, there's a lot of times where people make rash statements, and those rash statements come to be. So, for instance, you know, Yaakov Avinu thinks that nobody has stolen the idols of Lavan, and he says whoever stole them will die, and in fact, he proclaims death, which ultimately is the death of Rachel. You know, there's numerous rash statements. Yehuda says to his father, if I don't bring back Binyamin to you, I've sinned to you all days, and Yehuda could not really enter into Olam Haba for the 40 years of the desert. His bones are rattling in the coffin. There's expressions of saying something very powerful, and that even though it didn't come to be, the statement still was very remained. The question is, and this is actually a question my mother asked me, and that is why is it that Yehuda said something very strong about Binyamin here, and it never really happened? He said, "Let Binyamin, whoever has the cup should die," and that never really occurred. So the answer that my mother suggested, which is a very interesting suggestion, is maybe that's why Menashe, who's the emissary of the king, immediately says, no, don't worry, he'll be an Eved. Meaning to say he wants to temper that statement because he knows that the cup's in the bag. So Menashe tries to dilute that statement in order to avoid that. However, it is interesting to note, and this is just a very interesting point to think about, that is that there is a time in history where Yehuda is going to lead the charge on almost absolutely destroying Binyamin as a tribe, and that is Pelegesh Begiva. That is this episode that we just witnessed over here at the end of Sefer Shoftim. And who was it? Yehuda Yale Tchil. Yehuda is going to be the first one to ascend to destroy them almost completely. What is the most interesting aspect of this is what was the name of that cup that was put in Binyamin's bag, which framed Binyamin, and Yehuda declared Binyamin's death? It was called the Gevi'i HaKesef, the Gevi'a. Gevi'a is the goblet. It's the same word as Pelegesh Begiva, the hill of Giva. Isn't that fascinating? It's very much related to the notion of this moment in history where that terrible curse of Yehuda came almost to be. But still, thankfully, and thanks to last minute, Hashkocha HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved them from destroying the tribe of Israel. Mazel tov on the completion of Shoftim. Looking forward to continuing with Shmuel next time. Have a wonderful and meaningful day.